Welcome to episode 97 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live from Microsoft Ignite 2018. This is a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life, where we discuss a topic or recent news related to Office 365 or Azure, and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. In this episode, Scott does yet another interview from Ignite, and this time, he sits down with Michael Wells from Dell to discuss all things Azure Stack. Let's dive in.
Scott Hoag here at Microsoft Ignite, and this is going to be a really fun conversation. I'm looking forward to it. I have Michael Wells from Dell EMC, and we are going to geek out on Azure Stack for a little while. So before we hop into Stack, Michael, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself real quick? Tell folks a little bit about your background, and then we'll get into it.
I am with the Azure Stack product group, Dell EMC. I have been working with Stack for quite a while, but before that, my whole career has been in the Microsoft space. So I was a SQL Server DBA for many, many years, .NET developer before that. So
the number of people I have talked to, I used to be a developer as well, and we're all out there. It's absolutely crazy how many of us have transitioned out and gone into other things.
Yeah. Well, the deeper I got into development, the more I realized my passion was the data. And you really can't have a useful application without data of some sort. So that's kind of the direction that I went into. And that's led me to Stack, which is
where you are today. It has led you to a table in the back of the eatery to talk about Azure Stack. Awesome. So why don't we just start at the beginning? I don't think that I've ever talked about Stack on this show, so it might be a little bit new to folks in our audience. So let's just start out with, what is Azure Stack? And we can kind of go from there.
So what is Azure Stack? It's an extension of Azure in your data center. The simplest way to explain it is your own personal region of Azure. It is an engineered system, so it's consumed as an appliance. And once you have it, you start consuming Azure services. So the basic IaaS services, the storage is there. It's all based on Azure Resource Manager. So it's kept in parity with Azure. So on top of that is what all the services are offered as. So if I take an ARM template that I use to provision resources in Azure, I take that ARM template and I provision those resources on Azure Stack.
When it comes to email, Outlook and Office 365 are fantastic. But sometimes there are things you'd like to do that aren't implemented. Sperry Software creates Outlook add-ins and Office 365 services that fill in these gaps. For instance, there are Outlook add-ins to automatically print emails and/or attachments, save emails to PDF, send out recurring emails, or how about a warning when you're going to do a reply to all instead of a normal reply? Find these and many more email productivity solutions. Get started today by visiting www.sperrysoftware.com/cloudit.
Very cool. So yeah, I want to kind of key in on a couple things you said there. So you mentioned OEM and kind of device and driving that down. And I think that's kind of a point of confusion around Stack and what it is and how people pick it up. It is, like you said, Azure in your data center, but it's not Azure that you necessarily deploy yourself.
Right. There was the initial thought of what it was going to be, and then there was pivoting before Azure Stack went GA. Initially, there was going to be a software-only version, but about a little over a year before it GA'd, Microsoft said, yeah, no, this is going to be consumed as an appliance. And really what it boils down to is for Microsoft to maintain the security-first stance, to maintain the patch and update rate that they want to maintain, and to ensure performance and good experience, it really had to be consumed as an engineered system. So it's only available through Microsoft's OEM partner.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's not necessarily always performance either. It's also that support mindset for it, and having a unified support from an Azure deployment perspective. So I think it's always great, and it's helpful for customers to understand that if they choose to go down the stack route, there's kind of multiple layers in there. There's an OEM device with a company like Dell or HPE or somebody else, and there's a support model there for the hardware and kind of the underlying devices and fabric. So we've got Hyper-V and scale-out file server and, like you mentioned, the API layer. And then there's, what if I can't deploy my app service? and who's going to help me with that? And where does that go to? So that's all integrated as well, right?
It is. So we've worked very hard with Microsoft to come up with a good customer experience to ensure that there's not a lot of confusion as to who do I call for this. We've put a lot of engineering resources into an electronic case exchange with Microsoft. So if you do have an issue, you can call either us or Microsoft. And we can, on the back end, if we need to reroute that case, so if we need to, we identify that it's an issue with the Azure Stack software, we can reroute the case to Microsoft, including all of the diagnostic logs and everything you've submitted, without making you hang up, call somebody else, and then re-upload the same files.
And have to go through the whole rigmarole again of...
Exactly.
It's broken, help me fix it. So... can you explain a little bit? So we have that common API surface with ARM, so Azure Resource Manager. So like you mentioned, kind of write once, run anywhere, as long as the services are right. Available on both sides. And that works for all of the, not just declarative tooling like templates, but that's for the imperative tooling like CLI and PowerShell as well.
Absolutely. You can use Azure CLI, you can use Azure PowerShell. On the management side of it, there is an Azure Stack PowerShell module, but that's primarily for the cloud operator tasks. So bringing Azure Stack into an organization introduces the concept of this new role of cloud operator. It's not something that organizations that work in Azure today deal with, because these are responsibilities that Microsoft has in the Azure public space. So these are things like defining quotas, plans, and offers. And those offers are what your tenants would then subscribe to create their subscriptions. So you have the ability to control those resources, things like backing up of the infrastructure, patch and update. These are all things Microsoft deals with in Azure Public Cloud. But when you bring Azure Stack into your data center, this is something that you take on. That group would have an additional set of tooling that they would utilize. It's the same interaction that they're using PowerShell, they're using the Azure Stack portal, they're using the API.
What does that look like from an identity perspective? So when we go into Azure Public or Sovereign Clouds, we've got Azure Active Directory backing everything, and we might have a single directory that backs multiple subscriptions. Are you consuming the same directories inside of Azure Stack, or is it a disconnected kind of set of identity that's got to be federated through or pushed up?
Azure Stack has the ability to do both. So the most common scenario is what we typically call the connected scenario, which is you're using Azure Active Directory as your identity store. So if you have Office 365, if you're using Azure, you're using AED today, you tie into that exact same directory. All right, so that allows you to authenticate your users against the Azure Stack portal. You do have the option in a disconnected scenario, or in the event you need to be able to operate occasionally connected, where you can't hit AAD, you can use ADFS to do local authentication against.
So we've got a little bit of kind of a break glass construct to go ahead and interact with the service in cases where it can't come up? Or
well, it's a one or the other. So,
So
at deployment time, you have to make the determination, am I going to use AAD or am I going to use ADFS? Because you can't change the identity provider once it's been deployed. You would have to redeploy the system again. So it's identifying what your business requirements are, in which case best suits you.
So there's a little bit of planning involved there.
Absolutely.
Let's do some thinking before we click the button on Dell.com and buy a big rack.
Well, and that's one of the things that the OEM is going to help you with, because there is a lot of consideration. When you talk about bringing an engineered system like this into your data center, there's a lot of planning involved. You need to make sure, number one, that you've sized the solution properly. You need to make sure you've got the right identity provider. There's concept of registration, and are you going to be using the pay-as-you-go billing model from Microsoft, or are you going to be using the capacity billing model from Microsoft? Region naming and certificates and network readiness. And so there's a long list of things that the OEM is going to help you work through to plan out before this stamp actually arrives in your data center.
Cool. So I kind of want to touch on two things in there that I think is important for everybody to know. So let's talk a little bit about the consumption model you mentioned. So we've got kind of PayGo and integrated into existing invoicing and capacity. So can you kind of break those two down at a high level?
So consuming Azure, they want Azure Stack to be as close to Azure as possible. It's the same cloud operating model, just you have control of the hardware. It's behind your firewall.
It's sitting in your data center or on your premises.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The most common scenario is going to be that pay-as-you-go model, which means you're going to be paying for VMs while they're running. You're going to be paying for the storage that you're consuming. Microsoft understands that they're not providing the infrastructure that you're running this on. It's not taking up space in their data centers. It's not power, cooling, manpower, any of that stuff. So the rate that you pay for that is lower because you're taking on those costs as opposed to them.
But it is a consumption model.
But it is a consumption.
As you consume.
Right.
But it does have the tangible benefit of integrated support, integrated APIs, integrated updates, and compatibility across all the clouds.
Right. Yep. And there's some slight differences. So for instance, you don't pay transaction fees on storage. So you only pay just the storage you're consuming. You don't pay network egress fees, things like that.
Cool. And how's capacity sit in there?
So capacity is primarily intended for those when you go through that disconnected use case. So if you're going pay-as-you-go, it requires that your stamp be able to reach out to the Azure Commerce Service at least once every 30 days.
So you've got a little bit of telemetry or usage data that needs to go up to generate your invoice.
Because it's going to bill all that back to your public Azure subscription. So which has the added benefit of if you have Azure Commit, it will retire that Azure Commit.
Yeah, you're going to burn against that. And so integrated billing is kind of a nice model in there.
So if you can't hit the Azure Commerce Service once every 30 days, or you don't want to, then that's where the capacity model comes in. And essentially what you're doing is you're licensing all of the physical cores in the scale unit for a year. And so you pay that fee. It's a fixed rate every year.
So it's kind of like reserved instance, right? I've got the device, comes out of my premises, and I'm just going to pay up front whatever that rate is based on cores.
So no matter how many VMs I run, whether I run two VMs or I fill up the entire stamp, I have a fixed amount that I'm paying every year.
Mover is a cloud migration company that specializes in moving your company's files from file servers or cloud storage like Box, Dropbox, and Google into Office 365. Their patented technology makes Mover the fastest OneDrive file migrator in the world. Moving dozens of terabytes of data a day is a breeze. Use Mover's free, industry-leading migration guides or ask for a managed migration and they'll take the lead. With Mover, all your data is secure and intact. Running completely behind the scenes, you don't lose time, money, or hair while you transfer. Scan, plan, migrate, report. Migrations that don't suck with Mover. Visit mover.io for more info.
All right, very cool. So since you mentioned stamps, one of the other things I wanted to kind of talk about was sizing and how to bring, you know, these things kind of to fruition in a data center or in these scenarios. So we go through kind of capacity planning. How far can you scale these units?
So one of the announcements that came out regarding Azure Stack this week is the bump from 12 nodes to 16 nodes. So within a single scale unit, you can go up to 16 nodes. We don't have yet, it's on the roadmap, multi-scale unit, but the long-term plan is over time, as I need to expand capacity, I'll add additional scale units. And that also becomes your hardware refresh plan. As I add new ones, I can age off the old ones.
And is it integrated from the vendor side? So maybe as updates are made to scale units, they can kind of all tie together because it's the API that's running everything up. I'm just trying to think as you do hardware refreshes, you know, I buy a device today and 6 months later you're not making that one, but you have the next iteration of it because there's been the great new whiz bang thing.
Well, and that's one of the things that we've put a lot of resources into architecting the solution in such a way that we ensure the availability of those parts. So for example, we have a limited number of CPU options and the options that we can pick from are those that we've contracted with Intel to be able to guarantee availability over the lifespan of the product. Because you can't just, if you bring in an Azure Stack scale unit and 3 years from now one of those nodes fails, that node has to be replaced with the same node. I can't just take the latest generation of that
and plug it in and hope it's going to work.
So you need to make sure that what you're deploying is sustainable long term.
Cool. And it sounds like from the OEM side, there's a bunch of help there, right, to do alignment and understand, like,
yes,
hey, we're coming up, or there might be a need to go from X to Y, and let's start planning for what that's going to look like and how that's going to come together. From a services side and service deployment, I tend to be a little kind of flippant about it, and I always talk about Azure. It's scale out file server and Hyper-V. but it's also that API layer and service fabric and kind of fabric controller and everything brought into play. So it does a little bit more than just VMs and storage. Can you talk a little bit about some of the services that are kind of deployed into Azure Stack?
Absolutely. This is really what makes Azure Stack different from running any other hypervisor, is when you start talking about the service layer over top of it. You have your IaaS functionality, you've got software-defined networking, so the same load balancers and VPN gateways and network security groups. And when I provision a VM in Azure Stack, it looks just like a VM in Azure. In fact, the VM types actually match. So if I have an A4, a standard A4 in Azure, it looks like a standard A4 in Azure Stack.
Yep, consuming same CPU,
right.
same RAM.
And on top of that, you have app services. So you have web apps, you have API apps, you have Azure Functions. You have the ability to do SQL database as a service using the SQL resource provider. You've got MySQL database as a service. Another announcement this week here at Ignite was that they're bringing IoT Hub and Event Hubs to Azure Stack. So this is going to be another big use case for Azure Stack.
Yeah, it's a very interesting have your cake and eat it too kind of scenario when you say, I want to maybe do Kubernetes, so I want to do Kates, and I want to run it as a PaaS service, so let's do AKS. And then, you know, at some point in its lifecycle, AKS comes to Azure Stack as well. And now suddenly I can lift between the two and have portability in the services there. I think one of the things that happens that, you know, kind of customers need to be aware of is all services aren't always there on day one, particularly
right.
for PaaS services. Or there could be service differences or limitations, you know, features, functionality. It's kind of like when we go to do a deployment in the public cloud or the consumer cloud, and we say, let's do t-shirt sizing for VMs. Now let's go find regions that actually run those VM sizes.
Exactly.
Or have access to, you know, PaaS service, kind of X, Y, or Z,
right.
whatever it happens to be. So as those new services kind of roll out, how do those updates get pushed down to customers so they can consume them within, you know, existing stamps and existing deployments?
So the core functionality is pushed out through Microsoft's Azure Stack patch and update process. So Microsoft has targeted a monthly release cycle.
So they've got a kind of fixed cadence that they're aiming for?
Yep. In fact, it's even affected support in that, because this isn't something that you just deploy and forget about. This needs to maintain parity with Azure. And they're doing hundreds of releases to Azure a day. You can't do that on-prem, but this monthly cadence is important. And to ensure customers are following with that, there's a support rule that Microsoft only supports N-2. So you have to be on the current release or the last two releases before that to get support. So it's important to maintain that release cadence.
So for those cloud operators, that's a good thing for them to understand. And you're effectively, as a customer, never more than 3 months behind, 3-4 months, depending on what's going on with
right.
monthly release and did it make it out.
Exactly.
And being QA'd the right way.
You have that for the core functionality. As far as the resource providers, the SQL, MySQL, and app services, those are separate executables. So there's a separate installer for that. And that installer, when they push out a new update to that, you'll run that installer to update the resource provider within your stamp.
Yeah. So it's really no different than doing public cloud. Somebody still needs to watch for service health and announcements.
Exactly.
And understand where those things are coming into play. How does kind of service health and maintenance for those units look? So thinking as a kind of consumer in the public cloud, you know, there might be preventive maintenance. So there's some type of host reboot or there's planned maintenance. And right. I've got to kind of go through that cycle. On premises, I imagine there's a little bit of the same, but as a customer, you might be owning some of it through patch cycle. Hypervisors or hosts need to be rebooted or come up and down. So is that a similar experience to what's in the public cloud today?
Essentially, yes. So we have the concept of fault domains and update domains. Update domains are there for compatibility. They don't really apply within this scenario because the stamp is updated at one time. But what it does is it's going one by one through the node. So it'll drain all the roles from the node, patch it, update it, bring it back up, move on to the next node. So you don't have an interruption in your tenant workloads.
But you can maintain the same types of SLAs that you have on the other side for deployment?
Right. So everything within the LRS space, the locally redundant space. We don't have any GRS capabilities at this stage.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. But, you know, it seems like most things go LRS these days anyway, just from being driven into premium storage and some of the SSD constructs, you're kind of limited anyway as you deploy into public cloud. So that shouldn't be too different. Do you have access to some of the same things for storage when it comes to that? So just thinking through SSDs versus HDDs, like what are those storage kind of stamps or storage components look like?
So right now it treats everything as standard. The standard and premium is in there, but it treats everything as standard. That functionality will evolve over time. But within Azure Storage, it is consistent. You have blobs, tables, and queues. So it works the same way. With the one of the latest releases, we got managed disk support. So that's
nice.
Relatively new to Azure Stack.
Good to have.
Yes.
Managing IOPS on a storage account or request per second is not anything anybody should be doing in production.
No, not anymore.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Steve Peschke, and I'm one of the founders at Office365Mon.com. I worked at Microsoft for over 18 years, and one of the most common questions I got is, how do I know what's going on with the health of my Office 365 tenant? When there's a problem with your tenant, you need to know what's going on before your users. We help you understand not only when your tenant goes down, but how well it's performing. When you do have a problem, where do you start looking? Is it your network? Is it your tenant? Is it some feature inside of Office 365? Our network analysis features can pinpoint performance issues and help you figure out where those bottlenecks are. Sign up for a free 90-day trial today at office365mon.com. Stay in the know and stay in control with office365mon.com.
What else? Anything that we missed in there?
We talked about the services on Azure Stack, so it is limited. It's a subset of what's available in Azure today. But beyond that, you have the Azure Stack Marketplace. And whether you're in a connected mode or a disconnected mode, you still have the ability to pull down these marketplace items. The cloud operator has to download them for them to be available to the tenants so they can control what the tenants can deploy and what they can't.
So if you need to consume an NVA, they can effectively go in, pull down that publisher and that SKU and make it available for deployment internally.
And there is a large ecosystem of ISVs that have items in the Azure Stack Marketplace. In fact, and I can provide a link, there's in the docs for Microsoft a relatively current listing of all of those marketplace items. So expect functionality. So what's not available as a service within Stack, expect to be filled through marketplace items by either Microsoft and or ISVs. And then as over time, those will evolve into as-a-service offerings. So for instance, another announcement that was made is that Kubernetes is now available in public preview as a template within the Azure Stack Marketplace. So you can, as a cloud operator, download that tenant and then start deploying Kubernetes to do containers on Azure Stack.
Yep.
And over time, expect those types of things to become true service offerings.
Awesome. Just to kind of throw it out there, so being that, you know, this is kind of your core space, what was your favorite announcement at Ignite this week about the Stack offering, or in general? There's been way more than that going on here.
There's been so many.
You can give me more than one if you want.
The announcement of 16 node is exciting. The announcement of Kubernetes. The other thing is the IoT hub and event hub. Those are all, to me, really great examples of Microsoft's commitment to the platform and ensuring that it evolves and you get even more use cases.
Great. Well, I very much appreciate the time today.
That's my pleasure.
Thanks.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.